and welcome to the Computomics podcast. Our guest today has degrees in agronomy, marketing, and seed technology. He's the executive director of URUPOV, the Uruguayan Plant Breeders Association, and of the Seed Association of the Americas, SAA. Welcome, Diego Rizzo.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation to be part of this podcast.
Thank you for being here. I'm a little jealous seeing the good weather in the background coming in, but yeah, very exciting to have you here, Diego. We like to start with a bit of an icebreaker, and I know from having talked to you a little bit beforehand that you're quite the sports person. So I was wondering, what's your happiest memory from playing sports or watching sports?
Well, I will say from playing sports when I was a kid. You know, I was grown up in a research station. My father was an agronomist, and he used to work for the National Research Institute for agriculture. And there was a small soccer field there, and I used to practice sport there. And since then, today I'm 49 years old, and I have been practicing football since I was born. So I have a lot of memories about it.
That's wonderful. Playing soccer in front of a research station. And now you're, I'm sure, involved also in your function with a lot of research, with agricultural research and agronomy as well.
Yes, definitely. You mentioned something about the weather. Just for those that are listening to this podcast, they might know that I'm located in Uruguay, in the capital city, Montevideo, in South America. So we are enjoying summertime here.
Summertime and unfortunately a drought as well. So we're all hoping for a little rain to strike Uruguay at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. Huge drought. And that's complicated for our summer crops. We are expecting some rainfall for the following days. So we are all praying for that.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, I mean, speaking of drought, what are challenges in the South American seed market at the moment that you see? Are there any unique ones, maybe?
No, I wouldn't say unique ones. I think the question also is quite broad, because seed challenges, you have many. And I wouldn't link it as a short-term vision. That could be this drought that the region is suffering. It's not only about Uruguay, it's about Argentina, South Paraguay, and South Brazil. So seed production could be somehow complicated. But I would look farther than that. So more long-term challenges. And it's more about regulatory things on perhaps intellectual property. Or, you know, we intend to work a lot on how to facilitate seed movement and seed trade. And there are some trade barriers that sometimes provide, say, difficulties to companies to move seed from one country to another. So at the end of the day, it poses some challenges to farmers to get adoption to that technology.
Mm-hmm. Could you go into a little more detail? You said you mentioned basically two kinds, the intellectual property and the trade barriers. What would you say are the regulatory aspects with regards to intellectual property in the South American market?
So, you know, plant varieties are under a specific intellectual property framework, which is UPOV. And most of the countries here in South America have ratified or joined what is so-called the UPOV 78 Act. So that provides kind of a legal framework and minimum standards also to comply with the World Trade Organization requirements. We are living now in the 21st century, and technologies and farming systems are very, very different than 50, 60, 70 years ago. So sometimes regulations, laws needs to be updated. And in terms of intellectual property, we think that our countries should ratify UPOV 91 framework. And this elevates the bar, I will say, of how intellectual property is supply in different countries. So most of European countries, I would say all, are UPOV 91 Act, and that provide a better system and a better framework for plant breeders to carry out their business, and of course to enforce their rights and to collect royalties.
Mm-hmm. So in what way is it better or easier to support the business or to collect royalties in the UPOV 91 versus the UPOV 78? If you can go into that much detail at this point.
Yes, we can. Of course, yes, I can. So UPOV 91 have some provisions that provides more guarantees to breeders in terms of plant breeders' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And we call those provisions could be that is you can enforce through harvested material, you can enforce your rights. Also, the farmer's privilege, the so-called farmer's privilege, it's also a provision that is included on UPOV 91 Act. And when you have the limits well established, it's easy also to enforce plant breeders' rights. So if you know who are those farmers, smallholder farmers that could have the privilege of saving seeds without paying royalties to the breeders, that is also clearer rules for the breeders. And of course, there are many other provisions that, for example, that provides more guarantees. The essential derived varieties. You have a definition of what an EDV is, and under UPOV 91 Act, where in UPOV 78, you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say there are many technical things that those that are involved in plant breeders' rights and will understand and, of course, are worried about. So I will say when you sit breeders around the table to make business, mm-hmm. in order to exchange germplasm or exchange varieties, I will say one of the first questions is, okay, which country are you with? And which UPOV Act are you with? Is 78 or 91? And that gives a quick idea to the breeder, the framework that could be at national level.
Right. And regarding trade barriers, so would the UPOV 78 or 91 also impact trade barriers, or is that only on intellectual property?
No, UPOV is about plant breeders' rights, intellectual mm-hmm. property. When I was talking about trade barriers or non-trade barriers, also, it's other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was referring more about phytosanitary issues. You know, to move seed from one country to another, you need to comply with many phytosanitary requirements,
mm-hmm.
which is fair and which is needed. And we as an industry, we support this all phytosanitary framework because it provides guarantees, not only for those that are producing and selling, but mostly for those that are importing and buying and lately for the farmer that is planting. So that's fair. But sometimes those phytosanitary requisites are not based on science. They act more as a non-trade barrier. So when one government asks you to certify that you are free of X pest or X weed, etc., and you don't have that in your country, there could be some non-trade barriers here applying.
Mm-hmm.
So being this said, we are fine with all these phytosanitary requisites and framework. But if applied based on science, have I been clear on this? And
yes.
Not being used as non-trade barriers.
Right. So that would that be something that in your role as the executive director of UPOV and SAA, you're trying to achieve to have more clarity and I guess more science-based orientation as far as trade regulation and movement of seeds is concerned?
Absolutely. Exactly as you described. One of my main activities is to facilitate and promote business. So facilitate seed trade and promote seed business. And when you talk about facilitation, it's all about movement of seeds between countries. And definitely, and I think this is one of the the major assets that the SIA has, and it's working with governments, working with regulatory offices, trying to bring together regulatory officials with key city industry representatives in order to discuss, to have dialogues about regulations and how can we make regulations based on science? How can we make regulations, of course, to provide guarantees to the country that is importing the seed, okay? Mm-hmm. But also to be sure that at the end of the day, the technology in the seeds finally gets the end user, which is the farmer.
Right. You just mentioned technology. I mean, that's obviously a huge aspect of the seed industry or agricultural field as a whole, the technological advances and how they maybe help or in some cases possibly also hinder development. Where do you see the role of technology or how technology impacts the seed industry, maybe especially in South America?
Well, that's
a huge question, I know.
The answer is easy. The impact of technology is huge. It's huge. You know, sometimes it's difficult to perceive the value of a seed, because when you get a seed, it's just a tiny element, okay? But if you really can think what is in and on it, that's huge. That's huge. So let's go to a farm. Let's visit a farm. Let's walk around. Close your eyes and walk around. Yeah, the different lots of wheat, barley, corn, whatever. Mm. And some people see just plants. Some people see grain. Some people see food. Okay. Mm. And a crop, when you see a crop, there is a lot behind it. Of course, at the end of the value chain is food. And most of the, it's fiber, it's oil, okay? Mm-hmm. But everything started with a seed. So, you know, within a seed, you have genetics. And genetics is what at the end of the day will deliver the food you have on your plate or the cotton you have on your clothes or the energy you use in your regular life. And that's the work that breeders are devoted to develop better seeds, better genetics. And this is, and you know, we always say we have a great story to tell. We, within the seed industry, we have a great story to tell. But are we the agronomists, the scientists, breeders, the best ones, delivering the message? I don't think so. We haven't succeeded on that. Mm. We need people like you with communication skill, because at the end of the day, communication is about emotions also. And we need to know how to better communicate with emotion. What is in a seed? Mm. What we deliver to the society. And it has been very, very, very difficult for us. I don't know why the seed industry is one of the most attacked and under pressure industries.
I was just wondering also, because with just those key words that you mentioned, you know, the story, the role of a seed, how important it is, but also coming from the original question with technology, there is a huge difference between, or at least that's how it appears to me, between how gene editing, GMO, is viewed and also put in practice in, for example, South America, as opposed to Europe, where there's much more regulation and a lot more, not just regulation, but also skepticism in the population on that specific use of technology. So I'd be interested in your expert view on that. I mean, how we put it into words and emotion communicated is maybe the next challenge, but also just your experience, how that tech has changed the seed industry in your neck of the woods, if you will.
Okay, yes. So technology has changed it a lot. Yes, I started trying to deliver a message of what is in the seed regarding technology. Mm-hmm. But in order to achieve that seed with a lot of technology in and on it. Of course, the seed industry needs to have technology in their programs, in their activities. Just for you to know, when we talk about seed industry, it's a wide range of private companies, national, multinationals, individual breeders, universities, national research institutes, government-driven breeding programs. So within the seed industry, there are many, many, many actors. And all of them nowadays uses a lot of technologies. From the early stages of the breeding programs, working in field, but also in the lab. The machinery, the technology that the labs have today, and you know, when we go to computomics, that is a great example. It says how technology is being used at the labs to help to support plant breeders to have more speed, more accuracy on their breeding process. And that is fantastic. Sometimes it's very difficult to perceive how many technology is behind the development, the production, and also within the delivery. So all the value chain needs a lot of technology. And right. It's not only in the seed industry. We know wherever you are seated now and you look around your office, your house, or if you're in the car or wherever you are now listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by technology and latest technology. Mm-hmm. So plant breeder and seed production is the same. And it's amazing how it has been this revolution of technology in the last few years.
For sure. What technologies do you expect to be relevant for agriculture or seed industry in 2023 and beyond?
Okay. Artificial intelligence, definitely, which is now being used. So it's not science fiction, it's not future, it's present. Of course, where artificial intelligence will finish, I don't know. We are in the early stages, of course. Mm-hmm. Definitely everything that is around DNA. You know, what we are learning about DNA and how to work it in safety manners, that's amazing also. Mm-hmm. Learning how to read it, how to manage it. And that's also amazing. About data, collection of data, process of data. That is also amazing. You know, since we started, and I also referring to breeding, you know, mm-hmm. But I think that's all around our life. How much data is generated every second? That's amazing. So today it's not about generated data. It's about gathering, putting it in good databases and reading it. And after that, interpreting it, getting conclusions from data. Yeah. And that's a big challenge for the very near future, I think.
For sure. And using that data also to model and simulate with thinking of the drought again and other climate change challenges, to be able to model that with the help of data is huge as well. And we've covered that a little bit in other episodes of the podcast as well. So, yeah, I think yes. That's a great point. It's everywhere around us and in the seed industry as well.
Yes. So I didn't mention the use of drones and satellite images because I wouldn't say that it's brand new. And but if you go to our business, the use of drones, taking lectures or reading plots and lots of productions, and also the use of satellite image, that's very important for our business. Mm-hmm.
Is there any area where you would say as Urupov or SAA, you're putting a specific focus on with your activities with maybe either educationary or networking influencing policymakers towards certain technologies?
So just for for you to know. Europol, the European Plant Breeders Association, have specific goals which are quite different to the seed association of the American ones. So although I am wearing two hats and I run both associations, they are different. Europol is a national seed association, so scope is Uruguay, and it's all about plant breeders. We develop royalty collections systems. We do enforcement of plant breeders' rights. And we also have some communication activities around plant breeders' rights, seed law, and that kind of thing. The Seed Association of the Americas is a regional seed association that gathers countries from Canada, US, Mexico, up to Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, Colombia, Peru. And the scope is regional. And there we are more about facilitating seed trade and all this regulatory stuff. So coming back to your question, I will say that Europol, and we are seed association, so we are not plant breeders. We work for plant breeders. So plant breeders uses many of the technologies we were talking about. I can say, okay, we at Europol, we use molecular markers and to differentiate varieties, plant varieties. We use satellite image to know where the different crops are located. But those tools are more widely used by plant breeders, of course, and seed companies. And of course, we have different workshops. We have, of course, our congress. And every time we can, we invite companies like Computomics to be part of our events, because it's good for other colleagues to learn about it, but also it's good to regulatory officials to learn about how the seed industry is working and how the use of technologies, because the use of technology also provide guarantees to government. Also provide good traceability and records that then could be used also by some officials in their enforcement activities or follow-ups of different programs. So definitely
for sure. Back to data, administrative data in that case then.
Yeah.
Interesting. You mentioned the Congress. What would you say? The SAA Congress from 2022, what were your most memorable experiences from that?
For me, I will say the success, because there was a lot of challenge for us that were behind the organization after COVID times. So it was our first Congress after COVID. So our last Congress was 2019, and the next one was 2022. So there was quite an important period without the event. So it was a huge challenge about which will be the number of attendees, where will they come from, the number of sponsors and exhibitors. And it was very, very successful in terms of attendees, different countries where they came from. The exhibition floor was sold out. So we were very happy afterwards. So I will say I was quite nervous while we were preparing it, and because registration arrived quite late. But afterwards, we received very, very positive feedbacks on the outcomes of the Congress.
That's amazing. Any feedback that stuck out especially, like any specific feedback that you may remember? I know it's been a while, so.
No, it's so. People like how it's the setup, the organization. We have different floors. You know, we have the exhibition floor, the what we call the innovation floor, which is a poster session. Of course, the trading tables, the trading floor, and also the plenary room where you can listen to different PowerPoint presentation, technical presentation, etc. And but from the exhibitors, I will say, because exhibitors comes to the Congress to do business. And of course, to have some branding, and they could have exposure. But it's all about business. And the feedback I got, it was although SIEA Congress is not a huge Congress in terms of number of attendees, so it's not about thousands, it's about hundreds, but they could make really good business. Mm-hmm. So they say they really worth it coming. And this is the best outcome you can listen. People saying it worth it to come.
For sure. I mean, you don't need thousands if the 100 or even 50 people you meet are high impact for your business or for your project, whatever you're trying to achieve. That's what you want, a high level of conversion. What's your outlook for 2024? Is the next one, right?
Yes. We do our Congress every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And venue to be confirmed soon, I hope. But it will be around September. So for those that are interested to visit South America and the Americas, because probably it will be a South American country, just book in your calendars the last week of September 2024 to visit us.
And broadly the area of South America. You don't have any more specific location information yet. I hear it from what you said between the lines.
Yes. So we are working with a couple of countries in order to define the venue. Mm-hmm. So until we don't have a definition, I can't share with you. Sorry about it.
Oh, that's fine. I'm sure we'll update it as soon as it's known. We'll update it in the show notes to this episode as well. So if any of you are maybe listening to this episode, not right as it comes out, but a little later on, you might already know where it is or go to the website to find out. Diego, our time is running short, but I did wonder as a kind of a final topic, you've been traveling quite a bit through Europe. Or you did last year in 2022, the EuroSeeds Congress ISF meeting. I was wondering, what did you take away from the, if we want to, you know, dramatically call it the exchange between Europe and South America, but what stuck with you? What were the main topics? Anything that you're really taking away from that journeying?
So I was invited by EuroSeeds to be part of a panel discussions around gene editing. I'm not sure if you and your audience is aware how developed is gene editing in the Americas. So many of the countries here already have regulation in place for gene editing. So companies are already investing, researching, and developing new plant varieties with gene editing, which that is great, great news. So I was invited by EuroSeeds to be part of panel discussions in order to share how is the Americas in terms of gene editing. So when you ask me about the takeaways, I will say, well, it's concerning listening to what is happening in Europe around gene editing. I'm not going to talk about GM, which is another completely different story in Europe and in the Americas, which is today a huge difference. But when you go to gene editing, you have a huge opportunity ahead. You have companies already investing in Europe and developing, expecting what is going to happen this year around regulations with gene editing. Again, you have opportunities. And I think you are leaving behind if you do not amend what you do have today in terms of regulations that poses some challenges to the seed industry on the use of gene editing. There are many companies investing in Europe. And some of them approached me to learn about our region and our regulatory framework. Why? Because they have very good products to release, that if they can't release in Europe, they will come to South America and to North America. And we will have access to technologies developed by Europeans with European funds, yeah, here, because our regulation will allow them to develop their business here. So my takeaway is Europe has a great opportunity, and I think you need to keep working and having dialogues with the different government and regulatory agencies within Europe. You know, if you go and you refer to science, to and very, very well recognized scientists in Europe that you have are all in favor about it. Mm-hmm. So how can science prevail over current positions that are more ideological, I think? Mm-hmm. But of course, it's a European decision. But if you ask me, again, you have huge opportunities, and you need perhaps to make a big shift on where you are today.
Mm. It'll certainly be interesting, and maybe that's something that in the SAA Congress 2024 that can be some exchange on what will happen this year, the possible regulatory changes and the continued discussion, because it is more than just on the regulatory level. Like you said, it might be ideological. There's a lot of skepticism within the populace as well, which obviously then impacts policymakers. So it will certainly be very, very interesting. Thank you, Diego, for lending your perspective, both at the EuroSeeds Congress and, of course, here joining us for the podcast, giving us a little insight into what's going on with Yurupov SAA, and obviously your perspective on the European market. Thank you so much, Diego. To our listeners out there, the links to the SAA and Yurupov homepages are in the show notes to this episode, so feel free to drop by computomics.com to delve deeper into Diego's work and that of his colleagues, or to check out previous episodes. And of course, we hope to have you with us again next time on the Computomics podcast.